Thank you and good morning. I am happy to be here this morning. My morning started very early. I got off work this morning, worked the last 2 days, and both nights we managed to sleep all night, didn't have to get up at all, but when you work in a fire station with a bunch of guys who are 40 plus, we end up having to go to the bathroom a couple times at night. And spend $9 million on a station, and there's water hammer that happens every time you flush the toilet. And so someone was nice enough to get up at 4:30, so I've been awake for a while. But I am really happy to be here this morning. I was very happy. To be able to be a participant again in blessing a little one. And I was thinking, as I was looking at Kylie running around, and thinking, and this goes right along with what I'm going to talk about today, and I hope not to be too long, but of what a blessing little ones are. And Danny and I text from time to time, and I was telling him I was thinking about his grandpa the other day. Mark, who is a good friend of mine, spent a lot of time with, and remembering that the blessing of a little one was the perfect calm to a difficult time when Mark passed away. Beautiful and perfect, and timing that I believe was from on high. So I'm so very thankful to be here. I have something I want to begin here, and I'm going to begin with something probably a little bit different. But what I want to begin with is I want to talk about today the title of my sermon is, If He Made Me, Then He Loves Me. And my thoughts went to this because of a song that I've been listening to lately. And it's dominated some of my thoughts as I just consider it. So I want to go first down a path. And so I brought in a couple of things this morning, because I first want to start just to make us think. Because the first premise of what I want to talk about is my title. It says, If He Made Me. If He Made Me. And this is in every one of your lives, and I have all sorts of people who are here, and some who are our regular attenders, and some who are visitors, and I have no clue what goes on in any of your lives, or what things you think about, or how you know, where you stand in your spiritual life. Perhaps you feel very firm, perhaps you're wondering, you know, but there's this argument of logic, of one of these basic proofs that there is a God. And I want to start with that this morning, because if He made me, then. So the first thing I want to do is, if we look right here, we see, what do I have? This couple, I got a softball, I've got a basketball. The first part of this argument goes like this, is that in all things, there is a potential. Okay? This ball, of course, here I'm doing something with it, but if I sit it here, there is all sorts of potential within either one of these balls. Can do all sorts of things. I take this ball here, and I've now utilized at least part of its potential. I could take this ball, and I could hit that ball, and now I've utilized both of their potential. Pay attention. All right. I'll have to take that from Jerry. In all things, there is potential. Potential for something, but there must be something that acts upon it. I've got another example here. What do I have here? Fireworks. Yes. Now, I don't want to be pastor next year, so I'm going to... No? Okay. All right? There's one way to get somebody else to be pastor. I start launching fireworks in church, right? Every one of us went, right? Why? Because what happens as soon as I touch this wick? Right now, all there is potential here. It's potential. When there's a force that acts against it, right, then we see something going on. So this is the way this argument goes. This argument goes that in all things, there is a potential for motion. Okay? There's a potential for motion. A Roman candle, right? There's a potential. I light it and it's going to begin shooting things. Okay? But there's all sorts of things that happen before it gets to the act of shooting things. Right? I mean, once I actually light the wick, then it's going to go in here and there's a series of explosions that are going to happen here. But even before then, right, there's a motion that has to happen of me striking a match. There's this of heat and all of these things to hit this wick. But even before that, there was trees that had to grow, that had to be harvested to make a wrapper. And there was all these different minerals and things like that to create all the different explosive things. And these are different colors, whatever it is that makes them different colors, makes them whistle when they go off and all of that. But we go back even farther and you take this step and you continue going backwards. And this is the way this argument goes, that we see that everything around us is in motion. It's always in motion. Everything is moving from us, from every one of us. I mean, not only my physical motion, but if you take it even from a conceptual, you know, everything I do from the moment that I was born, I'm moving. There's something, there's a force that's pushing me forward. But even before then, when I was in the womb and with my parents and so on and so forth, right? And the argument goes that if there is potential for motion, it cannot be in motion unless something causes it to be in motion. And the logic, the apologetics logic of it, is that there must be what they call a first cause. I threw a basketball, so in theory, I was the cause of the movement for something that had potential, but it didn't actually move until something caused it to move. Now, of course, something caused me to move, and something caused my mom to move, and something caused my grandma and all of that. Something, you know, all of these things. It's this chain of events that has gone on throughout time, but there must be a first cause. Now, the thought process goes, it says, well, you know, Adam, you can't really say that because, you know, there's this concept out there that everything is infinite. The universe and all of that is infinite. And of course, logically, that doesn't have any logical basis. Why doesn't it have a logical basis? We go down this real quick thought process. If you imagine a line in your head, a couple years ago, I went through this in Sunday school. Imagine in your line, if you close your eyes and you see in your eyes, as far as you can see this way, and as far as you can see that way, dominoes lined up, right? All of them lined up. We all know when you hit dominoes and all that sort of stuff, okay? Every domino, let's say it's symbolic of 1 year, okay? Every domino in this is 1 year, okay? If this line of dominoes is infinite, how do you get to today? How do you get to October 30th, 2022? Because it's infinite. Okay, so the logic isn't there. Everything within our universe is determined by there being a beginning, right? Not necessarily an end yet. We haven't seen that, but by there being a beginning. Another emphasis, another example of this is all it's understood that the universe continues to expand, expanding outwards. Logically, if something is expanding outwards, it has to expand out from some place, has to have a beginning. And so this concept of a first cause is that all things that are in motion. But as we go back on this timeline, there must have been a first cause. And that first cause must have existed outside of what we understand right now. And this first cause is God. Okay? Now, we could sit and we could spend the next hour having a discussion about that, and you could pepper me with what ifs, and I feel like I could answer all of those. But if we just simply take that premise, and this is one of these exercises in apologetics logic, and there's all sorts of different arguments built off of it, but it's pretty sound, right? This is the reason why they discuss things like multiverse and all of that, because the argument can't be made that the universe isn't expanding and there didn't have to be a beginning. So there has to be, you know, there people who are against the concept of a supreme creator have to create caveats. But at any rate, I've given this example here with balls, with fireworks, with all of that. You know, and imagine the other thing I was thinking about, if you imagine if you're playing pool, you know, and we go to break and you break, and we hit one ball, and that ball hits all these other ones, and they move in all sorts of directions. But without one thing moving first, all the rest of it never moves. Okay? So this is kind of one of those arguments of logic for God. I just want real quick, let's look at this. This is scriptural. Genesis 1, 1 and 2 says this. The earth was out form and void. The darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Right? The first cause. Something moved. And I want you to think about this as I've just real quickly, there's so many more facets to this argument and so many more things to think of. But if you consider this, I want you to go down this thought process. If there is a God, must be all powerful and all capable to have created all of these things. If he first caused us, then we recognize that we are thereby his creations. We take a look at ourselves, and we take a look at at least the desires that are within man. And for most, almost everybody, there is a desire for good things. Not necessarily that they're motivated to do good things for others, but they are motivated for goodness for themselves. I want to be full. I want to have clothes. I want to be happy. I want somebody to make me happy. All these things, right? And so this whisper of good must show us at least part of the nature of this all-powerful creator. That his nature, at least, that the nature of this first cause must be somewhat good. Our existence, I have here, formed to survive, we're programmed to seek connection. This tells me something about God's nature. So I just want to begin with that, because this is what I want to talk about today. If he made us, then he loves us. So my premise, my first thing is that if there is a God, then we are purposefully made. I was looking on Instagram the other night, and I was looking, and there was this scientific thing anyway, and they were showing beginning at a house, and we've probably all seen this pullback, right? And it pulls back, the camera pulls back till you see a state or a city and a state and a continent and earth, and then it pulls back farther and you begin to see celestial beings and all that. It goes back farther and farther and you're seeing more stars and all that. And now you see the Milky Way galaxy and it pulls out even farther. And now there's innumerable galaxies all over the place, right? These things that they've been able to see. And you look at all of that and there's all these other very deep and rational apologetics arguments for the complexity of everything that's around us. But even if we throw out that argument for a second, if we believe that God was the first mover, that he created all of these things, and as intricate as the universe is to as intricate as DNA is, we talked about this morning, that he took the time in all of those things to create you. What does that mean? It must mean that we are purposefully made. It must mean that in the grand scheme of the billions and trillions and trillions of trillions of trillions of things that had to have been created for what it is, that there was some thought that went into Caden. Some intentionality. And therefore, our lives are of a great value to him. So let's turn. Joel this morning took some of my scriptures. As I figure, he didn't know he was talking this morning until this morning. So, and I prepared this a couple days ago. So, interesting where our thoughts go. Not that it's totally out of the ordinary, but I want to go to Psalm 119. And I'm going to read here, and then I'm going to read in Psalm 139. So Psalm 119, I'm just going to read verse 73. And this David, he's writing this psalm and he's giving this praise to the Lord. And he's saying this and he says, "Thy hands have made me and fashioned me. Give me understanding that I may learn thy commandments." He's giving this declaration. I see that in all these things around me, my life was purposeful. Now help me to understand the ways of someone whose intellect and whose abilities and all that is way greater. Give me the ability. Help me to understand. I want to go to Psalm 139. And I'm just going to read, Joel already read this. I'll read 13 through 16. He said, "For thou hast possessed my reins." That's kind of a weird thing. We don't say reins anymore. It's talking about the innermost part of a person. "You possessed me," and he says, "covered me in my mother's womb. Before I was even born, I belonged to you. I will praise thee, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous all thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well." You know, if you spend any time looking into the complexity of the makeup of man, down to a cellular level, and as far as, I've said this numerous times, the more progressive, the more technologically advanced our microscopes get, and the farther we can look, the more complex it becomes. Wonderfully. That word fearfully doesn't mean afraid. It means amazingly. I'm amazingly, extraordinarily made. "And my soul knoweth it right well. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being imperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet they were none of them." What a confusing way to say, "You knew me before I was born. You knew me before I was created. You had created for this this earth, and you had a thought for me." I want to just simply say this, and I'm going to make a real quick, we talked about this in Sunday school, and I'm going to make this statement, and perhaps it's bold, but it's the proper statement to make. We are coming up on election season. I would never wish to tell anybody how to vote, but I will tell you for myself, I'm a one-issue voter. I am as anti-abortion as it could ever be. And I want to tell you why, because you hear, I'm going to talk today, and I'm talking already about, if God made me, then He loves me. He had a purpose for me and for every one of us. And I think about it, and I think, if I'm talking about preserving the sanctity of life, what other issue could ever come up which would be more important, where I would say, I can accept destruction of life or potential life? I can't think of a single issue. What else matters? Talked about it this morning, you know, that there is only one thing, in my opinion, in mankind that is most precious above all. And it is our consciousness. It is our ability to make choices. It is our ability to choose. I made the point this morning, you know, that some military could come in here, some police officer, whatever, they could throw me in handcuffs and put me in the deepest, darkest dungeon. They could do any of those things. And they could do anything they want. Destroy my livelihood, destroy my body and all that, but they can never have my mind. It is the only thing wherein I am completely free to do whatever I wish to do. It is the greatest gift of free will, of free choice. And if we believe that every one of us was created for a purpose and the Lord had a plan and He made you with an eternal soul, then to remove that ability from someone has to be the most grotesque and terrible sin that can be done. There are all sorts of things and situations. I have great, great compassion for women who feel moved to do such a thing. I have great compassion. But I can't separate myself from the belief of a God who took the time and all the trillions upon trillions upon trillions upon trillions of things that had to be done for me to be able to stand here and turn the page of this Bible, took the time to create even me. With purpose. There's these things that, and I'm not necessarily going to read it, but you know, I was thinking this morning about Ben Carson. You know, a couple years ago, he ran for president. He's this brilliant neurosurgeon and all that. He was the first ever to do neurosurgery on a fetus in the womb. What would be the point of trying to fix something in something that was of no value? He was the first to ever have done it. And there's all these dangers that come when we begin to forget that every one of us was purposefully made. Talked about it this morning in Sunday school. Jared started it off and we went the whole entire hour about it. That Canada is preparing to finish legislation to complete their euthanasia laws, right? Where already you can choose, and someone who's critically ill or whatever can choose to have their life ended. But they're increasing it now. They're increasing the ability to people who are mentally ill. Well, we should all have a problem with that. And to, they quote it, mature minors. And this becomes this rational step when we begin to diminish God's purpose for every single living being. And that's all I'm going to say, other than the fact that, you know, I feel so strongly about this. And it's my belief every Christian should feel so strongly about this, that we are purposefully made, and everyone. We talked this morning about people with terrible disabilities and quality of life and all that. You know, one of these things that I said there, and I'll say it again now, is that the human consciousness is the most complex thing ever known to have been created. I don't believe there's anything more complex. We've barely begun to scratch the surface of what all the things of your brain does. Some people use less brain than others, right? We've barely begun to scratch the surface of it. There's a huge percentage of our brain in here that we have no clue how it works. And would we say that someone who is disabled has no value when we don't know what their consciousness? We have no clue the one thing that they have that we've been given free reign of, our ability to choose and to think and to decide. We have no clue. I want us to think about that. And it goes right in the context of what I'm talking about here today. If there is a God, then He loves us, every one of us. If there is a God, this is why we should be content. And I think this is such an important thing. Every one of us, we have life that comes and goes and is difficult, you know, different degrees of difficulty for every one of us. You know, this is the life that we live. And some people have a life that appears to be very simple, very easy, very blessed, and some much harder. I believe this with my whole heart. If there is a God, then He loves us, created us with purpose, and everyone He knows. And He is capable of handling the gravely ill, as capable as handling the incredibly rich, as capable of handling the common person and the person who lost their job and the person whose child committed suicide. All He's capable. Because He was the first cause, the first mover who was able to do all of these things. He's capable. He's capable. In Luke, the 22nd chapter, I'm just going to read verse 35 to set it up. And, you know, the local here, you guys have heard me quote this so many times. It's such a true verse to me. Christ he just finishes telling all of His disciples. And in the next chapter, however long a chapter was in terms of hours, Raleigh, I don't know. In the next chapter, He's taken and He's tried and He's going to be crucified. And He told His disciples this, I'm going to leave, all these things are going to happen. And He must have sensed within them that there was concern or fear or something within Him, because He made this statement. He said, remember, He says in verse 35, He said, and then when I sent you without a purse or scrip or shoes, did you lack anything? And they said, nothing. He's harking them back to a time when He said, there's a ton of work to be done. I want all of you to go out. Go two by two. And you two go over here and teach. And you go over here. And He says, don't take anything. You wear your clothes. That's it. Don't bring your wallet. Don't bring your credit card. Or you're not going to do any of that. I want you to go. And I will take care of you. And they went. And they came back. And they said, everything you said happened. And so He's called. He says, did you lack anything? Or did I take care of you? And this is something that is probably the hardest for us, but if He made us, then He loves us and He knows how to take care of us. The scriptures tell us He knows, and Glenn preached this awesome sermon one time about how common a sparrow is, the most insignificant animal on earth probably. Is that kind of what you said? There's so many of them, they're pointless. I mean, all they do is eat my chicken food all day. That's, you know, they don't serve any purpose. They're not enough to eat. You know, they're pretty ugly. I mean, they're not beautiful or anything. They're not a macaw or anything that's beautiful. But He says, even them, I know how to take care of. I know how to take care of all of these. I want to turn to 3 Nephi chapter 12. And we'll just look here real quick. I'm going to read 26 through 29. Christ is telling his disciples, and he says, "My Father sent me that I would be lifted up on the cross, and that after I've been lifted up on the cross, I would draw all men unto me. I came here for a purpose, and it was," and this deep and time-consuming, perhaps, concept of Christ taking sin and giving himself as a sacrifice, which is a whole nother study and sermon on its own, and yet this is our belief, okay? That Christ came and he took upon him the sins of the world and he died, that thereby forgiveness could be granted and salvation could be assured for those who are willing to follow. And he says, "This is why I came. If there is a God, then he loves me and he sent me for this very specific purpose, that I could care for you eternally." What a beautiful thing. There's this study that I read the other day. I like to read the Christian Post, and it's got all these different things. There was this study that they did, and they pulled, I think it was 10,000 young adults, ages 15 through 25. And they talked to them about their faith and religion and all that sort of stuff, specifically in the context of the pandemic that we just finished. And we know there's all these studies going out about the great mental health struggles that came from that and addiction and all that sort of stuff. I mean, obviously, there's all these things we're dealing with. And they came to this conclusion that of all these people, 53% of them said, "I have some sort of religion. I have a faith in God." And of that, the greatest majority of them said, "I've come out of this better than I went in because of my faith." It says a good percentage of them, it says they leaned upon their prayer life. It says that they found that they were more content, they felt happier, they felt better during that as compared to those who had no religion whatsoever. It didn't break it down to specific belief system, Baptist or Catholic or anything like that. It's just, "Do you believe? Do you believe that there's God? Do you believe he has a plan? Do you believe he hears you when you pray?" And they said, "It's amazing." Those who had a faith, who had experienced and realized that God is there and he does care, find themselves coming through this thing that none of us have ever been through in our lives, better off. If he made us, then he loves us. And he created a way that we could be cared for. It's an amazing thing. If he made us, then he loves us, and his vision is greater. And we must consider this, because none of us, you know, you start looking at these things, the complexity of a cell or the complexity of the universe. Let's just look at the Milky Way. Let's just look at our solar system, how complex it is. And we see that the most intelligent mind among us could never conceive of a way to do it so perfectly. Aaron and I taught a class at youth camp a couple years ago, and we talked about all of the things that had to be perfect and perfect proportions and perfect timing and all of that, that all these guys with brains as big as this stage have figured out for the Big Bang to have happened. And it was like 120-something. We read every single one of them. All of them had to happen at the perfect time, in the right proportion, for the perfect amount of time for everything to have been the way it is. If the Big Bang is something that you would consider, and I have no trouble with that, but only a being that has a vision that is beyond anything that we could conceive of would be able to figure that out. And so, if we look at that, there's little reason to believe that God enacted all of these things simply to destroy us or to make us miserable. Why create us in the first place? Why have all this complex thing happen in the first place if your desire was not for something good in the end? I want to just look here in Psalm 139. We'll go back there. And I'm going to read 17 and 18. It says this. He finished this in the end. We just read this. He said, "You knew me before I was created. You'd already had these things figured out. Before I was even in the womb, you had it all figured out." And then he says this in 17 and 18. "How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they're more than the number of the sand. And when I awake, I am still with thee." He says, as I'm trying to think, all these things that you've done in my life, David's saying. And he's, how precious are your thoughts, your desires for me when you've made it known, when you've moved in my life. How amazing is that? And he's got this understanding that I've not even scratched the surface of what you desire for me. If I could count, if it was even in my ability to count all of the good things that you want for me. It's like, we went to San Diego a couple of months ago, and, you know, the last time I was in our truck, we're still getting sand out of it. It's everywhere. It gets everywhere. You just walk on a beach and you do everything you can, wash off and you do all, there's going to be sand because there's so much. It's everywhere. If he made us, then he loves us. And his vision for you is so great. Far greater than our simple intellect and our simple understanding can focus on. This should bring us great joy. It should also encourage us to seek him so we understand. John in the 14th chapter, verse 1 through 4, he says, In my Father's house there's many mansions, and I'm going to go and prepare a place for you. And he says, and if I go to prepare a place for you, I intend to come back and take you there with me. If there is a God, if he was the first mover, the first cause, if he did all of these things, there is little reason to believe that his purpose for us is simply to destroy us, but rather for something great, something blessed, something amazing. These are some of these reasons why we should be motivated to follow him, because we're following someone who crafted our life. Here I am, my second job and my sometimes job, you know, I'm a firefighter, but I also have a cabinet business, and I also make, sometimes when people want me to, I'll make some custom furniture or things like that. And, you know, the first one I made a table for, and it's still one that I have some of these regrets for, but I love it, was Erica. You know, and Erica and Brandon trusted me with this thing, and we took time. Erica and I went, and we went shopping for the right wood, and it was painful how long we were looking for the very perfect pieces. Every piece perfect, and planned it out. And it took, I mean, you know, if I were to build tables, and I built several of them, and entertainment centers, if I were to charge hourly, like, nobody could afford me. You know, you couldn't afford. There's so much that I put into it. So much time and stress and all that. And then there's the reveal, and all I see is every issue, every problem, everything. You know, a crack that developed in the center, and I had to fill it with epoxy, and I did everything perfect, and I sat there for 3 hours babysitting that epoxy, and when I finally left, a little bubble appeared in it. And, you know, I hate Erica's table, but it's beautiful. And there would be nothing that would probably be more offensive than if Erica took an axe and began to beat it to pieces. Because I made it with great purpose. I wanted there to be years of joy and family, Thanksgivings shared around a table, and grandkids at some point, and prayers said, and studies had, and all of these things. I wanted it to be a blessing. And Erica, loving me as she does, she wouldn't do it to my table because it has value. You know, we should be motivated to follow the Lord and to believe in the purposes of this first cause, this first mover, because we were so lovingly crafted, perfectly created. Not a perfect person, but the intent and the desire, perfect. We should be motivated to follow him because he did it for a purpose. So I want to read. I got three more scriptures, and then I'm gonna come to a conclusion here. I want to go to 2 Nephi chapter 6. And I'm gonna read here verses 58 through 61. And it makes this scripture, it talks about, it's this example of all of mankind. This is what we are. It says, the vainness and the frailties and the foolishness of men. When they're learned, when they're educated, when they think they're wise, and they hearken not to the counsel of God, and they set it aside, supposing they know of themselves. Wherefore their wisdom is foolishness, and it profiteth them nothing, wherefore they shall perish. But to be learned is good, if it so be that they hearken to the counsels of God. You know, isn't it amazing? I find this to be absolutely amazing. I've talked today about two different ends of the spectrum, of the complexity of a human cell and the complexity of a ever-expanding universe. And one of these things that I find is so amazing is that the stronger our telescopes get, we line up the Hubble and what's the other one that they did to see farther than ever. And as complex as our electron microscopes get, the more we learn, the more we don't understand. The vainness and frailty of men, that when they're learned, they think they're wise. They haven't even scratched the surface. We look to and we serve and we believe, I hope we believe in a God who is worthy to be followed because he sees. As far as that cell can go, he sees and understands. And he gets because he put it there. And the ultimate act of humility is to throw up our hands and say, you know what, Lord? I don't get it, and I'm okay with that. I'm all right with that. I'm fine relying on an unknown being because I see that he is the first mover, the first cause. I can't attain to it. I can't attain to it. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. I'm going to read verse 28. We're talking here about this reason to trust in the Lord because he crafted our life. And here in this whole chapter, it's talking about the fact that God put together a way that we could be strengthened and encouraged, helped when we're hurting, when we have a lack of understanding, when we have children and we want them to be blessed, and all of these things that I believe are essentially important. And it makes this statement in verse 28, God set some in the church, apostles and prophets and teachers, after that, miracles, gifts of healings, helps, governments, diversities of tongues. You look at all that and you say, okay, what do you mean by that, Adam? He's thought of it all. He's thought of it all. He's already figured it out. I take a great amount of comfort in life because everything around us is full of unknowns. Are nuclear weapons going to be launched tomorrow because some crazy guy in Eastern Europe? I don't know. Is the economy to come crashing tomorrow? I don't know. Am I going to have diesel fuel to drive to work? I don't know. I have no clue. But I know that God's got it figured out. And I'm okay with that. I take great joy in that. I take a great amount of comfort in that. All these things that my hands can't handle, they can't touch, he's got it figured out. And I feel that way because if he made me, then he loves me. I'm going to turn to Jeremiah chapter 29. We have a reachable God. We have a reachable, feeling, considering, thinking, moving God. One of these things you read in the Old Testament, you see it a ton in Isaiah, is the Lord was just so frustrated with the people. He says, why do you think you can go out and swing an axe and chop down a tree and take this log, this trunk, to a guy and he carves a god and you say, oh, there's God. It's not living. You chopped it down. There's nothing there. Why do you think you can take a stone and take it to a sculptor and he can carve and make something? You say, oh, there's a God. It never was living. He says, I am a living God, capable of being touched, capable of being felt, capable of interaction. And here in Jeremiah chapter 29, 11 and 12, what 11, 12 and 13, what beautiful, beautiful verses. And this is, you know, he was talking to the people back then in a place where they were unknowing. Their future was uncertain. There was confusion. There was all this uncertainty. They were captives. What, tomorrow am I going to die? Am I going to have enough food? What is all of these things? We're in no different position today. And he gave them this assurance. He said, I know the thoughts that I think towards you. Thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Something to look forward to. I think of that for you. He says, then you shall call upon me and you shall go and pray to me and I will hearken to you. and you shall seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. This is that promise, is that God is touchable. He's interactable, if that's a word. If it's our intent, if it's our desire, if we look to seek. This is the God that I believe in. It's the God that I love. There's this song, and it's a beautiful song. We're going to sing it at some point. The group of us who do music, we haven't practiced it yet, and they haven't agreed to it yet, but we're going to do it at some point. This song is called He Made Me, He Loves Me. It's by Ben and Noel Kilgore. It's beautiful. It says, when it seems as if he's hiding, I will wait with hope in him. And even if he's silent, I'll wait on him. And though my heart is lonely, longing for your home, if Jesus is my portion, forever I will know. If he made me, he loves me. He knows all my story, and I shall look upon his face by and by. I hope that, you know, I doubt that I scratched any new level of understanding for any of you here. But especially, you know, as I'm talking about abortion, and that I realize it's controversial. It's controversial. Life is controversial. But all of these things, I want you to think about the greatness of God. David says, you know, in all of these things, the angels and all this, all that there is, he says, you thought of me. You made mention of me. You considered me. Because if he made me, then he loves me. So God bless you.